Welcome to episode 193 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is Gulfstream Park's very own Brian Natto. Me and Brian go over three races from this past Saturday at Gulfstream Park, 7, 8, and 10, and some angles that we talk about are an upcoming bug jockey that everyone should have their eyes on when playing Gulfstream Park, and also how important off-the-claim trainer stats are when looking for long shots. This is Redboard Rewind. To welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Redboard Rewind, someone who I have on all winter long, but had to bring him back for what is a slow week now in the racing calendar before we get ready for Belmont Stakes. It's Brian Natto from Gulfstream Park. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Spence. I'm doing really good, man. Good to hear from you, and always a pleasure. So looking forward to it. Yeah.
Always excited to have you on, not only, like I said, during the winter, but now we get into you know, these spring days where, you know, not that Gulfstream Park is ever an afterthought, but a lot of people focus on other tracks. And I feel like that's why it's always good to bring people on from Gulfstream Park, because if you focus that hard throughout the winter, a lot of times you take notes and you don't have time to, you know, make up cases and have spots where, you know, all that time that you spent on the races can really get filled in. And I feel like these couple races we're going to talk about, especially in this one, for me, I didn't have the best of days, but that's also for another day. I think it's going to be interesting conversations.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. You know, there's always things you can learn from or try to learn from and maybe see where you went wrong or whatever. That's why I always like this show and the kind of little niche you've carved out, because I think a lot of times as handicappers and especially not the professionals, but the people that play a lot. But, you know, I think sometimes they overlook the fact that, oh, I had a losing day, but there's always tomorrow. And that's a great mindset. And that's true. But it's also beneficial to try to go back and figure out maybe why you had a losing day and see if you can maybe build on it and, you know, going forward.
I think as well, for you coming out of, you know, the winter meet and going into these, you know, shorter days where it's only 3 days a week, obviously less races to handicap, maybe more time to do external digging. Obviously less handicapping for you, but that's sometimes not the best either. What do you kind of look forward to when we get into these kind of weeks and months throughout the season for Gulfstream Park?
Well, I think more than anything, now that we've gone to this upcoming week, we'll start our Friday through Sunday racing schedule. You're going to get a really good feel for the horses. You're going to see a lot of them. You're not going to have as many shippers. The championship meet is so tricky for many different reasons, but first and foremost, you get such a melting pot, an influx of horses from everywhere. So it makes it that much trickier. You know, you have to do so much more work to get a feel for the horses. Whereas now, in the summer months, you know, the gang's kind of here and you're going to know what you're going to get. And you're going to have such a good feel and handle for basically every horse you see, with the obvious exceptions of the 2-year-olds.
I know I always tend to bring this up when I have you on, but Gulfstream Park, obviously having all three surfaces, do you feel like you have a better idea with one over the other? And is there a surface that you tend to, you think, you know, obviously you want to improve every single day, but is there one that you're just like, man, I'm so close to getting these days where I can just, you know, get 2 out of 3 on the card? And is there a certain surface you're trying to work a little bit better at every single day?
Well, I mean, the Tapita is so tricky, and I think we're all trying to get, I think we're all trying to get a feel for that, because it's the newest surface, you know. So that for me is clearly the one. And the other thing is too, you know, with the three surfaces, you know, the beauty of it is It's great to have three surfaces, but you also don't get, you know, there's not a 8 race card of 8 dirt races, you know? So you can't, yeah. It's a little trickier to get a feel for it. So you have to kind of, pick up on some tendencies, but you also have to keep an open mind as well.
I've always told people, and especially beginning handicappers, when, you know, maybe, you know, they're looking for something in, like when they're used to playing Naira or playing Santa Anita and these other types of courses, and they say, like, what's the best beginner track? It's Oaklawn for me, because it's only dirt racing. It's only one surface. It's only, you know, they do routes, sprints, instead of some people. And like, I've seen notebooks for Gulfstream where, you know, it's long and short to PETA, it's long and short on the turf, and it's long and short on the dirt. And it's like, you have to have so many extra charts and just, you know, trying to pick up tendencies and trends. And for me, a track like this is one that, you know, people usually say, like, oh, you can get away with betting 2 or 3 tracks. If Gulfstream's in your repertoire, I feel like you have to play it for 2 years just by itself, and then you can melt in another track, because it's so difficult now with 3 tracks or 3 surfaces.
Yeah, exactly. You definitely have to really do your homework and put the time in, because it's not easy, and you get some crossovers with the Tapeta and the turf. And yeah, you really, really have to kind of put your nose to the grindstone to get a feel for it.
Well, let's start off with our first race of the pod. Race number 7 from Gulfstream Park is an optional claimer, 25,000 and 1X. Mile and 70 on the Tapeta. One last question for you before I get your ideas on this race. A lot of times, you know, you'll see people, you know, they'll kind of know the class levels. Is the condition book now for the Tapeta pretty solid, where it's like, okay, you can kind of tell class drop and where, you know, certain specific, you know, trainers might go when they're class dropping or class rising?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you also get kind of, you know, there's not a lot of difference between 8 and 12.5s and that kind of thing. And their starter allowances are really good. And, you know, you kind of get a feel of who might be able to bridge a class rise or not, or maybe who's coming out of a race that was really salty for the 12.5 level. So, yeah, I feel like now you can hopefully get to appreciate those kind of things a little bit more than when we first started and it was just a complete guessing game.
A couple of horses that I liked in this race. I thought Cindy's Song more towards the outside for Bracho and Carlos Rondon Mora. This one for me had a couple of interesting races, and obviously comes out of that state bred race at the right distance last time at 17-1, running third by 3 lengths. I just thought when he looked back through and all these odds, 95, 40, and then a couple 5-1s where this one actually ended up winning at Tampa in those claiming 16, non-worth 3, and non-worth 2 lifetime. For people in the class levels, you just kind of cut that in half, and that'll give you kind of your open level, and that would be only 8,000. I just wonder if this one now getting a big class jump up and having that board hit last time out, if maybe this one was kind of going to keep improving, and we were going to see maybe an improvement over that 71. The other one that I was going to play ended up passing. That ain't too shabby. Rohan Krishan, 3rd by a 0.5 length last time out. And this one just, that's a nice number first off the claim of 30% with a positive ROI. Yeah. Now we're switching surfaces going back to the Tapeta, which this one has only been on once. But now, I don't know how many people have noticed, they have added Tomlinson's now in there for the synthetic, a 394 Tomlinson. Maybe always that first time on that new surface, little bit confusing. This one that was back in the maiden ranks, now this one's been facing winners for quite a while. I thought the fact this one gets claimed and gets put on a surface that didn't run so well on first time out, when you have trainers like this that have hit at such a high percentage, they're not guessing as much as they're like, they've seen something in these past races that says, okay, this one might do well now on this type of Tapeta the way it's been running lately.
Yeah, Rohan is sharp. Just a note for anybody that's listening. He wins at a high percentage for a lot of different reasons, but he puts his horses in spots where they can win. And he, like you said, a 30% off the claim speaks for itself. I didn't use it, that ain't too shabby, because I thought, you know, this was an off the turf race, and yeah. I thought there were some horses that stayed in here that were turf horses and they were unknowns, including Towser, the 10 on the Tapeta. You know, I thought Sensitivity, first time Jose D'Angelo on Tapeta, first time Jose D'Angelo getting back on Tapeta in the race that she came out of at Turfway was against a better group than the one she meets here. So I kind of felt like she would move up a little bit, and I wasn't going to ignore Towser because she's got two huge turf figures for Sappy Joseph Jr. And we know how good Sappy is. So those were the two I wanted in here with a little bit of downburst. The downburst was the Rohan horse that aired in the Tapita last time by 7. You never see that. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, she is facing winners for the first time, but I thought that was a race that would have played in here, especially because she gets some of these playing her game.
And obviously, thank you for adding that. I forgot to add that this was an off-the-turf event. For Towser, though, especially for a high-percentage trader like Safi, still, I just don't like when horses double pair off first off and second off the layoff. Usually you see a really good race first off or a bad race first off and then improvement. When you see these two giant numbers, and obviously they were back-to-back buyer tops for this lightly raced four-year-old filly, for me and having the outside post, I just was a little bit nervous. And now we get to switch to synthetic. This is kind of the one where the race where everyone sets their picks in at 12 o'clock and then, oh my God, it rains. And then everyone's like, why is Towser taking so much money? Oh, it must be the smart money. Whereas I think this race was a lot more people putting in their picks early and then not realizing the surface change.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different things that go on in that, and I agree. And the other thing is the betting public, and this is just, I don't know, over the last 5 or 10 years, it just seems like every race has to have a huge favorite, and they just lump on to somebody, and they just keep betting the heck out of them. And I think Towser, you know, it was that horse, goes off at 3-5, but this was a watered-down race, and mm-hmm. she laid over the field with those two turf figures. And Spence, it's not the end all be all, but we like to say a lot, if you handle turf, theoretically, you're going to handle the Tapita. So mm-hmm. that plays into it as well.
Towser and a little bit of downburst for Brian. Cindy's song for me. Let's see who gets it done. This off the turf event right now.
And they're off. Level beginning. Not much pace on early, so no decaf reaching out to take the early advantage from the gray sensitivity in second. Towser's in no hurry, moving up on the outside third. That ain't too shabby. Fourth at the rail ahead of Cindy's song, and downburst is last. It's a headstrong long shot in front. It's no decaf, 2-1 on top. Sensitivity second with race favorite Towser on the outside third. Tucked in is that ain't too shabby together with Cindy's song, and held up at the back is downburst. The opening quarter was just 25-1, so they raced 6 furlongs from the finish, and no decaf has the lead by 3. Lionel Reyes has snug hold of Towser, racing in second with Cindy Song 3 wide third. The gray sensitivity 4th at the rail for Sonny Leone, racing in front of that ain't too shabby, and the trailer is downburst. So Reyes doesn't want to lose his spot as Jaramillo, or rather Bracho, moving up on the outside with Cindy's song, and Towser's going to challenge for control now. He had no choice to end the tactical sense of it as he went 49-3 for a half mile. Towser within a neck of no decaf. 3 wide Cindy's song, 4th at the rail sensitivity, then that ain't too shabby. The trailer still is downburst. The leader now is Towser. Towser committed for home a bit early today, leads by a neck. 3 wide, that ain't too shabby. 2 path, Cindy's song, driven in 4th is sensitivity. Downburst is running home from the back. They run with 1/4 mile remaining through 3/4 and 14 flat. It's Towser in front. From the inside, it's downburst underway from last, and on the outside, that ain't too shabby. Less than 1/4 mile to come. Reyes tries to get another gear from Towser, but that ain't too shabby is right alongside. That ain't too shabby reaching up and taking over from Towser. Towser tries to find under pressure, but that ain't too shabby is a 6-1 winner. That ain't too shabby by a length and a hand from Towser second, sensitivity third, downburst was 4th and 142-1.
And that ain't too shabby gets the job done. 72 the winning buyer, 14-20 the winning mutual. Towser runs a, I guess you could say, disappointing second, but again, for me, everyone says like, oh man, the buyers dropped 10, 15 points. It's a different surface. For me, it's kind of hard to say like this horse should be running those 80s when you just don't know coming off of those surface changes. And for me, now looking at this one, you know, that ain't too shabby. Didn't improve all that much. Went from a 70 to a 72, kind of right place, right time. But nice to see Rohan kind of keep this horse's form in that 70 level that didn't have to drop down to another 60, which obviously wouldn't have gotten it done here today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's pretty clear now, and Towser ran okay, but I guess that means she ran about a 70 or a 69. Yep, exactly. And it's pretty clear that, A, she didn't handle the surface like she did the turf, and B, if you knew that going in, you know, she's not going to pair up an 80 again Then you know darn well that you want to look outside the box, and you know you don't get Rohan off the claim paying $14 that much, and that's what you got here. And kudos to him, and you know now it's obvious, but he left her in for a reason, you know, and certainly the reason was that he felt that she could handle the Tabita.
I think as well, and this is something that's why I love using DRF formulary. I don't have the stats here, but something that I love you can do within trainers is you can look at off the claim for Rohan. You could say, okay, what are the average winner's price? You know, what's the biggest winner price? And if all of a sudden that number, you know, is not as big as we're getting here at $14, like now you can kind of guess, like maybe he does win with more shorter price horses. But if you have a couple $20 winners in there, this is a horse that's kind of very hard for me to keep off pick five tickets. But that also brings me back to Towser. And these races are so difficult. And everyone always talks about, you know, like you want to play for value, you can't play for favorites. I can see where everyone in the world wants to play this horse with paired up buyers. How do you leave this horse off a pick five ticket? And I think it really does come down to it. And this is exactly why the game of horse racing is so difficult. These are the type of horses that you just either have to beat or you can't play the pick five ticket because the horse is going to be so short. You have to play four or five against, but that also will add extra money onto your ticket because you just can't narrow down because you're trying to beat such a short priced horse. That's what makes ticket structure so important when you're playing these pick four and pick five pools as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It to me, it's like if you're playing an $80 ticket and that says to me, you think that this is a sequence that's going to be chaos. Well, I'm not going to not use Towser because that means I obviously think other races in the sequence could blow way up.
Yeah.
But if you're on an $8 ticket, you know, and maybe you don't use Towser at all, or maybe you just, you know, you single her and try to get some value that way. The pick five, I think we're in an era where the difference between the pick five and the pick four is monumental. I mean, pick five is you don't even really have to beat anyone. You just have to hit it. Whereas in the pick four, you probably have to beat two favorites to get any kind of money out of it.
That's fair.
I've never personally been one of those guys that plays a ticket and says, I'm not going to use the 3-5 favorite because I don't, you know, I think she's going to be over bet. That's never really been me. I'm not going to go five deep and not use Towser and feel like an idiot if I get four or five to ones in the sequence. And because I was stubborn, I didn't use Towser and she won, you know. I've never really personally been that kind of guy. But you know, there's something to be said for if you're not investing a lot and you say, you know what, I think the other races are really tight and that they're going to be won by logical horses. So Towser's not doing me any good. I'm not going to use her, but, I don't know. I'm not going to eliminate horses like that.
I think it always comes down to just the betting strategy and just, you know, how much you're willing to win or how much you're willain to lose. That for me seems certain. Let's move on to the next race. Race number 8 from Gulfstream Park is an open 10,000 clamber, 1 1/16 miles on the synth again. Where are we going in here, Brian?
Well, this is another tricky race, you know, and the fact that, a couple things now. First of all, they all look the same on paper, okay?
Yes.
Winning Factor, who my note on Winning Factor last time was. I'll read it to you. And this is a note. He was wide the entire way. First run with a rush on a stopping leader who ended up finishing second, opened up easily. And my last comment was worth a look on the class rise. And so I think that's where you have to start this, the analysis of this race. Well, why is Winning Factor back in for 10 off such a dominant win? Jose D'Angelo is so good in these kinds of spots, and he plays poker as good as anybody on the ground, moving these horses up or dropping them and all that kind of stuff. It rubbed me the wrong way that Winning Factor was not in on the rise. So I said, you know what? Again, I had a scratch. So I ended up being five deep in this race. So I'm certainly not using Winning Factor. Okay. That like, we just had this. It's a good segue because we just had this exact same discussion. But I'm certainly not picking them on top either at underlaid odds. Bobby DeBona is back firing on all cylinders. Watch the music. The one horse was running in his care for the first time on Tapita. Bobby is about 28% off the claim. And this one was running on Tepeda for the first time since Bobby claimed him two back. Down inside, the right kind of stalking style. I said, you know what? I'm going to try this horse in a spread race. Certainly Timmy M was a major player as well. Telephone Talker. Telephone Talker, as we went off the air, Samantha and I said, you know what? This horse is interesting because Fausto Gutierrez is so good off the claim. And this horse does not want to sprint. And he claimed him and immediately moved him back to routing. And I said, I think my last line was before we signed off, I said, he's up there at 9-1. You could do a lot worse. And I used him. It was a spread race, Spence. And I didn't want to get beat by anybody that looked like had a logical form.
I think for me, and you brought up one horse that I'm going to use, and that being Timmy M for Fernando Abreu. Just trying to find a spot in here that just looked a little bit interesting. This is another one that, you know, it was in for 10 last time, not jumping up this time, but was at a solid 72 mm-hmm. price, getting a little bit better price than on a winning factor. And that's a stat you will see a lot in different handicapping books is if they win, the correct thing to do is to make them rise. If they drop, it's worse. And then something in the middle is if they stay the same, you really have to kind of know the trainer and what exactly is going to happen there. But I thought Timmy M was definitely interesting at a little bit better price. And then Rye Sense of Humor on the outside off the layoff for Vasquez and Steve Budo. I just wondered off the claim here, 29%, 360 ROI, very, very low sample size of only 7 stars, long, long layoff, like I had said. But just if this one, who had been running it for 10 the last 2 times, ran anything near those 2 numbers, has been 4-for-4 in the exacta, 5-for-6 in the exacta at the distance. This is just one that seems to just, at this specific type of idea of on the synth at this distance, will run well. The only thing that's going to hurt this one will be the layoff. And then if it does run bad, this Rye Sense of Humor, I'm definitely looking to play next time out because I feel like the only reason this one would run bad in this spot is due to the layoff. Hopefully they bring this one back on the synth and doing the same thing here, going long on the synth if I'm wrong. So for me, it was Timmy M and Rye Sense of Humor. And for Brian, a little bit all over the place, Telephone Talker, a little bit of the one there being Watch the Music. And we're going to continue to also use the one or the number 9 winning factor. Let's see who gets it done here in this low-level claimer right now.
Good start. From between horses, Sarah Watt reaching out for the early lead. Sent hard at the rail, Watch the Music's on the go. Splitting them or Ulfgar won't be far away. Winning factor's in no hurry, but he's going to work over and land a pretty good tracking spot. He's the gray up into a joint third now. Out wide on the course in Rye Sense of Humor in front of Telephone Talker, then Unified Conquest. On hold behind them is Bright Devil. Timmy M is second last. The early trailer here is the North Remembers. In the run around the first turn, Sarah Watt leads and leads now a length and a quarter. Watch the Music second, winning factor on a stronghold third. Rothgar fourth at the rail, followed fifth by Telephone Talker. Then Rye Sense of Humor in front of Bright Devil, who's on a strong tug while very wide. At the rail, that's Unified Conquest. Timmy M's in the white blinkers. He's settled second last, and the trailer is the North Remembers. 24 seconds for the opening quarter. Smooth sailing for this race favorite, winning factor, and he's up to take over the lead. They went 48-2 for the half mile. Winning factor, a clear leader now. Rye Sense of Humor's the one in the pink, 3 wide into second. From between horses, Watch the Music, dropping back Sarah Watt, then Bright Devil. Sandwiched between horses, Telephone Talker, as Timmy M begins to warm to the task. He's about 5 lengths behind. Dropping back tamely was Rothgar, passed by Unified Conquest, and trailing throughout as the North Remembers, and winning factor has the lead. 3/4 and 12-4. Winning factor has to go to work. From between horses, Watch the Music on the outside. Rye Sense of Humor. Timmy N fanned way out the center. Off the turn and the stretch drive. Here's Watch the Music to have a crack at winning factor, who digs deep. Winning factor is still in front. Watch the Music not by yet. Charging hard, Telephone Talker with Unified Conquest. 16th to go. Unified Conquest didn't get through, but Telephone Talker surges to win it. Telephone Talker, 3 parts better than win.
And Telephone Talker does get the job done. 75, the winning buyer, looking at a winning mutual of $21. Just looking back as you were talking, you know, looking at this horse, and you say, look at this. This one gets claimed. They decide to bump this horse up. Look at every other routing number this one has ran on the PPs, and then look at all the sprinting numbers. Man, what a mistake by not using this one for me. And this is coming from someone who used 2 horses above, you know, 4-1, trying to beat a favorite that I thought was very, very interesting, not rising in class like you already talked about.
Yeah, I mean, he makes perfect sense, doesn't he, now in hindsight? And, you know, I picked him fourth. I used him. It wasn't like I loved him or anything, but There were reasons to think he was going to move forward back in a big way today. He clearly just got run off his feet last time, and he, to his credit, he still made up a few, passed a few horses in the lane. Basto does such a good job with his claims. So, you know, there were definitely reasons to think he was going to cycle back around and run a race that would, you know, put him in the mix. And when you're talking about a 9-to-1 horse, I think that's what he was, 9-to-1. That's all you can ask for. Just run a race that gives him a chance, and maybe something happens and somebody gets, some favorite gets in trouble. And then you got something working, and that's just basically exactly what happened. Timmy M was about 19 wide for whatever reason on the far turn. It was a kind of an odd ride, and he was legitimate. I actually spent this afternoon, I did my replays for the week, and the chart tells you Timmy M was 6 wide on the far turn. Timmy M was about 10 wide, 11 wide in this spot. So, you know, notice that. And there was some other trouble in the race, but hey, you got a big number on a guy that knows what he's doing. That's for sure.
I think as well, and seeing Winning Factor came back, did run second, did run credible. 74 was the buyer there. I think as well, and for me, for someone who uses buyer figures and buyer pars a lot, buyer par for this race is an 81. He dropped about 6 points based off James Quinn's old ideas. That'd be about 75. So when the one ran the 79 last time, I mean, technically the trainer's keeping him right within that buyer par of the race. Still, you'd like to see the encouragement of rising in class. And in this one, you know, with how you see the race end up, you see someone who wins doing a change with a horse and, you know, taking this one from sprinter out, getting the job done. This Winning Factor horse to me now, if we now see a jump up in class, I would be completely against, because maybe this one needs this 10K level, 12K level, or else he's just in trouble when they find one horse better.
Yeah, he's a total, and my notes for him were loose and controlling, nothing to offer late. He's a total fade for me next time. He had to win. I know being on the lead is not always the best spot routing on the Tapita. I get that, but he is a total fade to me next time because of that. So, you know, just food for thought, and I have so much respect for the job Jose does, but this horse will beat me next time. If he wins, it'll be so without me.
What's one of the last races of this pod? Race number 10, the 60,000 purse for a handicap, 5 furlongs on the turf. We're getting off the Tapita here. These races are always so hard because there's not really a class level for it. These horses just end up showing up. One that I was definitely going to use is Capture the Time. Another one second off the layoff, coming out of a 35,000 beaten claimer, ran second to a horse named XY Speed, but had a good price. I thought if you look back the last two times prior to that, this one ran 5 furlongs, 88 in the Roar and a listed stake in the optional 75 and 83. I just like that this one is not on the lead, but can at least be a smidge off of it in that, you know, length and a half, two length business to get the job done. I wasn't all that worried about second off the layoff. I thought this one could improve again. And turf sprinting, short cycle, but 7 starters, 43%, $2.60 ROI. For me here, 31% trainer on the turf in Ronaldo Yanez. Give me this one.
Yeah, this was my long shot play, and he made sense because he did have a hint of a rating gear, and he did run well last time. But you look at this race. My long shot play of the day was Amon in this spot, the number two horse, because you just look at this race, and I know Uncle B scratched, but the pace was supposed to be basically suicidal. There's hope in him as fast a horse as we have at Gulfstream Park. He's not as good on turf as he is on Tapita, but you knew he was going to blaze the way early. You look at Warriors Fried. You look at That's a Fact, Jack. You know, there were just horses, full disclosure, probably had to go in some way, shape, or form down in there. And to me, this was a meltdown race. And I thought Amon was I just thought that with all the speed and his two turn foundation. Now, you know, he runs the risk of getting completely run off his feet, but I thought I thought it was worth the risk reward because I just felt there this was coming to a meltdown. The other thing, and of course I make my pick so early, but it probably got flat that the race, my thought process got flattered a little bit by the rain we had. So the course had a little give in it as well. And, you know, we talked about it on the air and said, I feel like that's going to hurt the speed as well. And I have a lot of respect with Joe Arsino. And if you look at Amon, you can't find a one-turn race on his form. There are races for this horse. And Joe said, you know what? I'm going to run the stakes, sprint in five. He was going to be a good price. I said, I'll take a shot with him in a race where I just didn't trust any of the speeds. And so I had it 2-10-9, and all the three horses I picked, XY Speed and Chessmaster, those are the other two horses that wanted to come from off the pace a little bit. So I said, that's how I'm going to play this. I'm just going to take a shot with my long shot.
Amon for Brian. I'm going to go with Capture the Time. Let's see who gets it done in this handicap right now.
They're off in the Pembroke Lakes. From between horses, Hope and Him wins the break and blast to a clear lead. Warrior's Pride didn't break today. He's going to try to rally from off the speed. Full disclosure is second. That's a fact check. He's up to the outside third. Chessmaster's toward the back of the field with Amon, and the trailer is Omaha City. They pass the half-mile point. Hope and Him unopposed on the top end. He leads now by a length and a half. That's a fact. Jack second. Full disclosure third. XY Speed is next as Chessmaster warms to the task three wide. Back from there, it's Capture the Time ahead of Warrior's Pride. Trying to rally from the back is Amon, and the trailer is Omaha City. The leader is Hope and Him. To the top of the stretch through a 21-3 opening quarter. Hope and Him with a wall of pursuers. From the far outside, Chessmaster, from between horses, XY Speed. Down at the rail, full disclosure, Amon on the stand side. Final eighth of a mile. XY Speed takes the lead. Amon erupting late. Here's Amon rolling at XY Speed. Amon! On the turn back, Amon and Angel Morales with a big late kick. They got up to win it.
Amon gets it done. $22. The winning mutual, $85. The winning buyer. And this is something I want to talk to you about because a lot of people nowadays, they either just don't want to pick closers entirely, almost if it's the freaking Derby or the Belmont. And they just think, oh, there's six speeds in the race. Well, someone's going to be speed of speed. Someone's going to run the other speeds out of the race. And the speed horse will win. So the fact that you pick three closers in this race and it comes bing, bang, boom right there in the trifecta, it still shows in this day and age that, you know, if you're copying and doing notes for certain tracks, like keep track of certain races, keep track of, oh, there's four speeds in this race. Well, how often is one of the four speeds winning? It's probably not a lot. And horses that, you know, are forced to, you know, maybe they're usually stalkers that are about 2.5, 4 off. Now they're 3.5 to 5 off, but they still have that decent closing kick. And then they kind of turn into closers in your eyes and they get the job done.
Yeah, this is a good ride by Angel Morales. And, you know, you have to have a lot of things go your way. And that's luckily what happened. And I, like you said, I had the try. I had it straight. And all I did was have a win bet. I don't usually bet exactas or certainly trifectas. So it kind of looks foolish after the fact. But, you know, it worked out. And I got to give a shout out. And if people are asking and wondering, you know, give me an up and coming jockey or somebody that does well. This 7-pound apprentice, Angel Morales, boy, he has really impressed the heck out of me. And I said, we were in the office and you watch this race, he hustled Amon just a tad early. And when they got to the far turn, Amon was, I think he was still last, but he was in the picture. You know, he had made contact with the field. And I actually said it out loud. I said, he's got a chance in here because, you know, I readily admitted on the air there was a chance that he was going to be five lengths behind the field when they got to the far turn. And to Angel Morales's credit, he kept him within contact. And I think that proved the difference because you could see at the end, he was making two strides for everybody's one stride. And that's where that route foundation comes in. You know, it worked out. If Amon was 3-1, you know, you wouldn't catch me dead picking him or betting him. But at 10-1, and you know this as well as anyone, and it's, you know, a great. We talk about it a lot in this space. It's risk reward in this sport, and when you're 10-1, you can risk a lot more because the reward is worth it, as opposed to when you're 5-2, and you're just saying that's not a good way to play this race. So, you know, it happened to work out. I'm glad I finally picked a winner. Usually you're the one picking all the winners when I'm on the show and my horses are running seventh.
I had to give you a show to show that shine on for you. And just overall, in what you spoke about, I think a lot of people also make the discernation of, oh, it was the jockey that won this race. And you said that, you know, kept him in contact. I think it's the Rout Foundation that had a bigger percentage of why this horse won. And I think that people just don't take into effect, and this is why I've always handicapped for the last 5 years of my handicapping, I go bottom to top. I want to see how the horse came into this race. If I see seven routes on the page and all three of the top buyers in the last 10, 12 races are in routes, and this horse was in a sprint last time, well, they're probably trying something with the horse, trying to put some more speed into the horse. Watching how trainers train, and obviously when they switch barns, it can be difficult. But when you find these guys who are good, you know, first off the claim, they sprint them, and now they're right back into a route, they think they know something now. They think something is up. And I think that in this podcast specifically, we came up with three horses that were just doing different things. And, you know, one was a pace presence, one was a trainer stat. And I feel like this one overall kind of gave us a good inkling on why you should be handicapping and just looking for maybe not the top three choices in the races.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that Fausto Gutierrez one was, that was right there. He probably claimed this horse last time or put in for the claim. I don't know if there was a shake or not, but and said, why is this horse sprinting? I'm going to claim him and kick him back to a route, and he's going to run a heck of a lot better. And that's certainly what happened in that spot. And, you know, to get that horse at around 9-1 was a heck of a price if you picked up on it and you didn't have an opinion elsewhere in the race.
Now, I didn't prep you for this, but one last question. We're two races through the Triple Crown so far. Any quick thoughts throughout the races? I just know I didn't have Mage on Derby Day, but once I heard about the small injury that one took going into Preakness, and also just for the reason that is, every single time the Derby winner runs in the Preakness, they are unbelievably low odds. I really thought that Baffert runner, it almost reminded me of like the Oxbow race. I'm just like, this one's going to go to lead and win the race.
Yeah, the race was over when they put up the half mile split. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Mage ran well, to his credit. I'm glad he ran well. You know, it was clear that his Derby was no fluke, and I feel very strongly that Mage is absolute hell to pay the rest of the year if it comes back in the Travers, I guess, or maybe they get a prep or whatever. I think he's hands down the best 3-year-old in the country. But you know, race flow and dynamics played against him, and he ran well and ran as basically as good as he was going to run with that kind of setup. You know, he acquitted himself nicely. It's fun for racing because now the championship race is wide open. You know, Forte apparently is going to come back in the Belmont. And, you know, if he were to win that race, you'd have to probably put him back on top because he's beaten Mage twice, although Mage won the race that matters. But Forte obviously wasn't able to win the race that matters. So it's a lot of excitement for racing. Boy, the Belmont, I guess it's wide open. It's going to be like a turf race, right? There's no speed in the race. Yeah. So that's going to be really problematic, especially with King's Barnes coming out. He was going to be certainly the controlling speed. So maybe they're going to let this Preakness winner walk around there again. I guess, you know, he's the speed, but a lot of times the Belmont can turn into a jockey's race. And, you know, I would like to think they're just not going to give it to him like they did in Baltimore, because that was essentially what they did. But, you know, hey, listen, to his credit, he went out and took it too. You know, he didn't have to win. Just because he set the pace and got loose doesn't mean he's got to win. And so he did it. So you have to give him credit for that.
I agree with all your statements in there. But that is all the time we have for today's podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming on. Brian, where can people find you to talk about all things Gulfstream Park? And what do you got going on this week over there down in Southern?
Yeah, we got this is the first week of 3-day racing, so we got that going on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we draw early, so all those cards are out. The Rainbow Six is probably going to be $250,000 in the Friday pool, so that's a lot of excitement. That's starting to get big as well, and you know, you can find me on Twitter, Brian_J_Natto, and I'm out there, and yeah, you know, we still got a lot of good racing over the summer, some of the speed coming up in July. So still a lot to look forward to. You know, I'll keep an eye on everything else.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Spence.
Podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming on and talking all things at Gulfstream Park. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Fornatel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.